you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome. This is the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Today, I am very happy again to welcome Stephen King back to the microphone. Stephen is the founder and CEO of Growth Force, and Growth Force is an outsourced accounting department for nonprofits and small businesses. How are you, Stephen?
Doing great, Mickey D. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta. Please remind me what part of the country you're in.
Well, I'm in Kingwood, Texas, a livable forest, which is northeast Houston, and it is absolutely gorgeous here today.
Wow, a livable forest in Texas?
Yes, yes, it's off the Gulf. Mm-hmm. It's a piney forest and beautiful trees. And I have a boy from Queens who always wanted to live outdoors. So fun.
It's a great place to be, I hear.
It is. It's wonderful.
So I don't want to steal your thunder. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, today, you know, we're coming out of this pandemic, hopefully, God willing, and I'm seeing kind of a pivot point for a lot of nonprofits who are figuring out how to come out stronger, right? How to run better and how to raise more money. Because the smart ones, just like in for-profit businesses, have pivoted as the market opportunities and needs have changed. And the nonprofits who are successful are also being innovative and looking at this as an opportunity to do things differently. So that's going to talk about, you know, kind of the five steps to get there.
Okay. So five steps nonprofits might look at doing differently in order to thrive coming out of pandemic. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, run better, grow stronger as an organization and raise more money. It's a trifecta. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do it right, if you learn the lessons from a well-run for-profit, you'll come out of this pandemic really strong.
Okay, got it. So, okay, what's our first step?
Well, first you got to understand, you know, where are you, right? What's the, what's your current state? You know, 68, according to Charities Aid Foundation of America, we enter into the end of 2021. 68% of nonprofits are experiencing a decrease in funding, while at the same time, 34%, roughly, both approximately 34%, have increased operating costs. Right, Charity Aid Foundation of America, and that is a double whammy.
Yep,
that is difficult to really get out of if you're not well run. And so, you know, I've just finished a webinar, about 25 years worth of work into this, to talk about how a well-run nonprofit can learn the things from a well-run for-profit. And the first step starts with your mission. Why do you exist? And what are the outcomes that best further the mission? The second step is looking at what are the economics. What is the P&L for every one of those outcomes? So you want to measure in step one, the efficacy or the effectiveness of each program to achieve your outcomes, right? And then step two, combine that with the numbers, with the finances. Then step three, you take the data from one and two and you start to make the what I call the core four decisions that every nonprofit needs to make. So for over 25 years, I've been doing this and studied thousands of organizations in this four core decisions that you need to make with data, not just your gut. So that's what we do in step three. Step four is getting the organization aligned around a new plan so that you're putting everybody focused on that mission and understanding what the economics are and how the decisions got made so that you're all rowing in the same direction. You know, a well-run company has a mission, has a vision, has core values, and gets people to sign on to a higher purpose. It should be easier in a nonprofit because it starts with the mission, but often that step gets missed, getting alignment around the plan. And then finally, my favorite, which I hope we get to spend the most time talking about, is how do you use that to raise more money?
taking notes here, in case my audience hears me typing on a keyboard. But I have one devil's advocate point that I want to bring up before we go on with this discussion. Yeah. And so forgive me, that's sort of my job these days, is to either play devil's advocate or to play the to feign some ignorance about our topic, right? So the general consensus is that running a nonprofit is actually harder than running a for-profit.
Way harder. I've done both. In a for-profit, right, at GrowthForce, if I want to increase top-line revenue, okay, I hire a salesperson. I sponsor an SEO ad. I go to a trade show. I hire, you know, there's levers you can pull. But in a nonprofit, you're waiting for somebody to give you money. And so it's a much, much more difficult to run a nonprofit. And that's why it's so much important for the nonprofits to be run better than most American businesses. I didn't say run a, you know, as that nonprofit shouldn't be run like small businesses. I said nonprofit should be run by the best small businesses, the most successful small businesses. Well, and so the first thing is measuring the efficacy of your program, the effectiveness of your program. So most organizations you can prioritize programs by does it help you serve more people, or does it help you increase the quality of the services to the people you're already serving, right? So it's either increase quantity or quality. The third thing to measure is, does it help bring in some money? One of the key secrets to this whole thing is finding fundable projects, finding programs that donors can see the tangible result of the gift. Vocational services, transportation services, you know, there's something that if you get somebody to give you money, they can see a seat on the bus. They can see a person going through a course. The idea is to be able to have which of the programs do that, because they can help fund the others. However, program needs to drive money. Money should never drive program, right? Your mission is first. So that's why we rank these programs first. Does it help you serve more people, or does it already help you increase the number of people you serve? So there's three rankings we suggest. Two are programmatic, and one is, does it bring in money? What you do is you look at each of the programs to see, all right, what are the outcomes that are successful? What's our primary thing based on step one? Is it helping serve more people, or is it helping increase the quality? When you are able to then rank those, you can start to make data-driven decisions about where to spend your money. So we created this stack ranking system where you literally give each program a 1, a 2, or a 3. In each of the three things, is it quality, quantity, or money? Which are the best is a 1. Which are the worst is a 3. And then 2 is obviously in the middle. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to get overly scientific about, you know, just start to see, because what we do is we multiply the three numbers.
Right.
And the ones that are ones are stay at the top. And then if one has got two ones and a 2, that's a 2. And you figure out which is a 3, then it starts to multiply. You start to get bigger differentiation, which is an 8, a 9, a 12, a 22, because you can start to see based on those three things. So and then next to those ranking.
Sorry, you're talking. I'm sorry. You're talking about an actual formula for ranking the programs.
The efficacy of the programs. Yes. Okay.
All right.
Right. And then you can change the qualifiers, meaning if quantity and quality are not the right two things, then maybe it's, you know, like for example, the Fort Bend Women's Shelter, their mission is to help break the cycle of homelessness and abuse. Right. I mean, you know, it's they assist survivors of domestic violence and their children, but it's about safety and self-sufficiency. So, you know, their mindset would be, we want to help figure out how many people we only have 64 beds in the shelter. We want to focus on increasing the quality of care. So your ranking by your programs is really based on your unique needs. But for simplicity's sake, quality, quantity, and money allows you then to start to see which of the programs get the best outcomes. And that's step one. Then what is the income and the cost to deliver each of those programs? In QuickBooks, that's the easy part. You know, that's where most people really struggle, is the economics.
Right.
The beautiful part is that QuickBooks was set up for service businesses. you know, QuickBooks Online is just so masterful to be able to see exactly what does it cost me to deliver each of my services? How much did I spend and how much is left in my budget? And program managers are able to then look at the economics of each program and see how much does it cost to deliver it to each person so that we can help to share that with the development department and they can go tell our story and use our numbers to tell a story. So what you know, after you've ranked the program effectiveness, just simply look at the classes that you have in QuickBooks, right? Classes should be set up for each of your programs and a subclass for each individual service that you offer. And you just, when people, the biggest expense every nonprofit has, in service nonprofits has, is people. So the simple trick is use your iPhone to turn on T-sheets and track people's time. 80% accurate. Have them spend 5 to 10 minutes at the end of every day and just guess, where did I spend 80% of my time? And what you'll find is you can integrate that with the payroll, and now the biggest expense has now been allocated to every service, to every product, program, to every class. And so you can quickly see step two, the economics. Which of my programs actually make money? At the Village Learning Center, it's the Home Community Services, or HCS. It actually makes money because that's it's a you know, the funding is there. And I don't care if you earn the money or you get it donated from the government. It makes money. And so by looking at the cost of each service and comparing it to any income that it brings in, you can avoid the biggest cash flow trap that most nonprofits have, is that they don't know the real cost and they have a very successful service that is losing money every time they offer it, and they have cash flow problems because they're so successful. And they're frustrated because they know that there's people who need what they do and they just don't have the resources to get it to all of them.
Right. I mean, I'm raising my eyebrows at the phrase that they have cash flow problems because they're so successful. But you mean they're successful at actually providing services, not successful at funding them.
Correct. They're successful at providing services, and they haven't understood what the real costs were. So they got surprised with the fact that, holy crap, we need to hire another person. And or we're just stretched too thin and there's not enough funding. If you understand the exact cost to deliver a service, you can show the donor the tangible result of that service. Right? And the exact cost is not just the salary and the taxes, but it's also all the other burden, the labor burden, your fringe, your 401k or 403b and your health insurance. But it's also, you know, the true cost of the people includes recruiting and training. And so you allocate, when you allocate the payroll, you allocate that with the burden rate. Plus, the accounting rules are very clear in allowing you to allocate overhead costs to programs. You can't run this program without some piece of the executive director's time.
Right.
And so that's the other magic step. You know, that's where in step two, we not only look at the profitability of each program, but we above the line cost, but we go down to the overhead allocation and see, okay, now you divide that net total cost, including allocation of the overhead, you divide that cost by the number of people that are served. And now you've got a cost per person served. You've got that unit economics, the magic elixir for the fundraising department.
Yep. It seems pretty straightforward. It seems like almost just like algebra. And
exactly right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's kind of like, you know, if you're you know, a good mechanic knows how to tune a car, right? You know, if you know how to tune QuickBooks, it's this 88% of nonprofits use it for a reason because it's so powerful. It's just, you know, most people use it as a checkbook. So that time tracking, T-sheets is what we recommend, but you can use any time tracking system and integrate it into QuickBooks. It's not that hard. But the magic is being able to allocate those labor costs once you run the payroll. And then you've got the ability to, you know, see not only which ones have cash flow challenges if you're successful, but then use those cash flow challenges to be able to go to your donors and say, look, we want to provide more service. Here's exactly what it costs, and show them the tangible result of their gift. That's what the Society of Fundraising Executives says will increase giving, both higher average giving and more frequent giving.
Understood. All right. So we've gone through the first two steps.
Yes.
Take a look at the mission, take a look at what the programs are and the desired outcomes, and weigh the programs against each other using quality, quantity, and the money involved as part of a, you can actually just do a bespoke formula for ranking those out. Step two, take a look at the economics, get P&L for all your outcomes, take a look at the income and the cost to deliver those programs, include the overhead allocations, and then divide that net cost by the number of people served. We talk about that. In step three, you're saying examine the data and that there are core four decisions to make with that data.
Yes.
What are those four decisions?
So the first one is, who are the best clients to serve? If your mission is to serve anybody who walks in the door, you can skip this step.
Huh.
But most organizations, you'll find that not everybody is willing to follow the program and achieve your higher purpose. For example, the Fort Bend Women's Shelter has 65 beds. And they used to think that we are full every night. Life is good. We're doing a great job. But their mission is not to house the homeless. Their mission is to break the cycle of homelessness and abuse.
Right.
And you get that by getting the first job. And so the best clients are the ones who they add the most value. The ones that are willing to go through the vocational training program. They in year two, we did this. The second year, they went through the same cycle that we did, evaluating the program of efficacy first. They added a behavioral service, neural networking savers, because the women who went through the vocation services in year one didn't have the mental attitude to believe they were worthy of a job. So now their best clients are the people who go through both the behavioral therapy services and then the vocational training services.
But isn't there something kind of weird and sneaky about weighing one candidate against the other? I mean, I get the point. You want people who you can judge will actually invest themselves into the program because, well, like to use the word investment, right? We want them to make that same kind of investment for themselves. But I know some people who might say that it seems sort of unethical to judge one candidate against each other that way. What do you think?
Depends on your mission. If your mission is to serve anybody who walks in the doors, by all means, don't say no. But if your mission, if you have limited resources, well, your mission is to achieve a specific outcome, you've got to find clients who will help you achieve the outcome. That's your mission, right? To find those clients that leverages your service, the leverage the services that create the best outcomes. You know, there's somebody else. That doesn't mean you ignore anybody. I wouldn't suggest for a second that you're going to put somebody on the street. I know the Fort Bend Women's Shelter does not have 65 beds filled with people in vocational training and services. But the point is, when you have limited beds or whatever the equivalent is in your organization, your focus has to be creating the most outcomes.
Right. Right. All right. So
and then finishing that up then. You're making data-driven decisions, right? So in this step, we're going to take the stack ranking, list all the programs in the order, right? So Village Learning Center, vote number one was vocational, number two, residential, number four, transportation. And then in columns next to it, you show the economics. What is the cost? What is the income, if any? How many people are served? And then you can see what is the cost per person served for each program on a row. And so you can look at the stack ranking, and you know what they found, that the Village found, was very interesting. It was a founder-led organization, and you know, nobody wants to say no. Mickey D, to your earlier question, right? We had limited resources, and we just don't want to not serve every adult with learning disability, live an inclusive life. That's our mission, right? But well, we have limited resources, and demand is going up like 68% of the business, and revenue is going down 34% of the organizations. We're just like everybody else. You have to make a hard decision. And what we found was, by ranking them, adult daycare, which is in Texas is DAHS, D-A-H-S. Texas is the second worst state in the nation in funding for adults with disabilities.
Oh my goodness.
So that's why Village Learning Center exists. But there wasn't enough money from the state to provide the quality of care that we had for our mission. And so they were low on the stack ranking. They were like a 22, and their cost per person served was the highest, $694 a month. So by having both of those two data points, now you can make a data-driven decision. And the first is which client is the best. The second is, this is the hard one, which programs do you stop? Which programs do you start? And which ones do you continue? Right? Start, stop, continue. And this is the most important decision because this defines your mission. This defines who you are. And so you take that ranking and you draw a line where the money runs out and spend all of your time kind of above and below the line, right? If you're saying, okay, number one is vocational training and here's the cost to deliver the service and here's its share of the overhead. Mm-hmm. Now here's number three, here's number six, here's number nine. You can add up all the costs, including the overhead, and get to a point where you run out of money.
Right.
And I got to be the chief financial officer of Amnesty International and then the director of development over 7 years. And we did a zero-based budgeting process to help start at zero and build your way up till you run out of money. That's kind of the basis for this concept. And that's how you do a stop, start, continue. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
The trick here is one of the programs has to be a fundable program, right? Something's got to bring in or raise money. And the more measurable the program, the easier it is to show that to raise money and show the tangibles of the gift.
Right.
There's some, you can't make it a restricted grant either. So here's a trick. Always add a set at the end of your request, you know, please give us $500 a month for our vocational training services and all our other programs. You need that phrase at the end of any ask to make sure it's unrestricted.
Right. Okay. So core four decisions to make with that data. I think we've covered all four.
The development is the last. Yep. How do you maximize the return on investment on your development office? And the idea there is you look at the profitability on everything you'd spend in development, just like you would do on a sales and marketing campaign. But we can cover that. I'd rather get right to number four, which is how do you get the board aligned around this?
Yeah. Yeah. The question I'm going to revisit at the end of this, we can talk about this at the end because I don't want to derail us any more than we currently get derailed because of me. I'm just going to save it. I'm just going to edit that out. We'll save it for the end of the episode.
Okay.
All right. So yes, the fourth one, how do you get the board to be aligned around the plan?
Well, you know, whatever you put in front of the board is what they're going to talk about, what management monitors gets done. So I suggest you start work backwards from what do you want to get done? What do you want the board to be talking about, right? Their job after hiring the executive director and raising money is to help provide strategic direction, right? And give leadership the resources it needs. And so if you give them a P&L that has detailed line items, and you show them a line that says technology spend is $12,000 over budget, they're going to ask you about your hardware and your software. I suggest instead you show them trends, so they stay at a high level, of the key drivers, the key outcomes. You know, if your number one thing in the organization is the number of people who can get that first job to break the cycle of homelessness and abuse, then trend that. Show where that's going. If you look at the cost of that, how many people are served, generate a page of reports on the key outcomes. Now, you know, the finance department needs everything, right? Everything they want. But the full board, I would give them a one-page summary report. In QuickBooks, it's called the budget performance summary. And I would give them some trends of the things you want them to be talking about.
Well, and we've talked on the podcast before, not you and I, but other folks, about what it means to not only look at those internal trends, but look at external ones as well for the purpose of forecasting.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's a perfect segue into the big job is yep. turning this all into a budget. Right. So, you know, here's the secret steps. It's not that secret. It's, you know, it's a good CFO, they easily know this. You want to start with the programs, right? The individual program managers need to go in and say, here's what I want. And what we typically suggest is you create an Excel file that has a P&L for each program, each class, and each subclass. And then you have a tab for administration, a tab for the development department, And don't forget the capital budget. And then that all those individual program requests add up to the master budget. And in priority order, you go through and focus on which programs drive with outcomes and the cost per out per person. You'll maximize the return on investment that you're getting from that investment that you've got.
Right.
The board's job, the leadership's job, is to put together a budget for the board to look at what programs are up directly above and below the cut line. And then ask development to identify which of the programs are fundable. And then you just prioritize. The third one is staffing. And that actually, I skipped a step in step three. This is the hardest one because nobody wants to let anybody go. And staffing costs 70 to 80% of the expenses in a nonprofit. So once your programs are decided, then you can see how much time does it take for each program versus how many time is available. And then you can make a data-driven decision about adding people. If you're cutting programs, you've got to reallocate people. Then you also got to reallocate overhead. And that's a mistake that I often see people make is they allocate overhead to the departments and they cut a department and then they don't make that adjustment.
Right.
And lowering overhead, by the way, a lot of organizations are outsourcing, right? It's sometimes a lot more effective to outsource to reduce the cost and turn it into a budget without any insurance costs, et cetera.
Right, exactly. Good stuff. And it feels like there's a lot to think about, but there's not as long as you're staying on top of the data agenda. And that brings me up to the other question. I mean, this also has something to do with not only getting aligned around a new plan, but looking at the people within who help you get these things done. If an organization, if a nonprofit doesn't have someone like Growth Force in their corner, who within the organization is the person who can help do that data, do that crunching, do the data collection? Is this is not the development staff, is it?
No, it's a finance staff, right? It's accounting and finance. You know, the challenge is that the accounting industry, the CPA world, I'm a CPA for 35 years, is not set up for this. It's set up for for-profits, and even the nonprofits ones are set up for compliance, right? Their focus is getting the audit done and the tax return done. This is more of a CFO function than a CPA. We're talking about management accounting for nonprofits because this is all unit economics is what management accounting is all about. And that's a fancy word for unit economics is a fancy word for how much does it cost you for each service and how much revenue does it bring in, if any. Once, you know, that's what we're doing here is we're breaking the cost of everything you do, matching it to the revenue. And that's what in the for-profit world, the best run companies use management accounting.
Right. Management accounting and every nonprofit's finance committee should be staying on this somehow. My brain is cascading into all these issues of how do you get the finance committee to, you know, understand their job and to include this in their monthly or quarterly outputs for the board. And that's probably a topic for another podcast. So
they can send the treasurer of the board can watch my webinar.
And yes,
it explains the whole thing. It's designed for executive directors and treasurers of the board.
Right. Is the webinar online?
It's on our website at growthforce.com/NFP as in non-for-profit. Growthforce, G-R-O-W-T-H force.com/NFP.
Got it. I can't wait to check it out myself. Stephen, this is amazing stuff. So five steps, I guess they are actual steps. Examine the mission, take a look at the economics, examine the data, get everyone aligned around the new plan. And then I'm going to rephrase number five. Tell me if I'm off base here. How do you tell the story with that information in order to raise more money?
You said it exactly right, Mickey. You know, what's fascinating is I get to see a lot of nonprofits books and all of it's public, right? In the 990s, most organizations' funding comes from foundations or governments and a little bit of events. And sometimes there's a corporation that's kind of a donor, but 80% of all giving comes from individuals. If you look at Giving USA statistics, it's the exact opposite. And often that's the smallest portion of a nonprofit's growth, a funding source. Mm-hmm. So that's a big, big, big opportunity for most every organization. And so by knowing the outcomes that help you the most and the revenue and the cost for each outcome, you can now go to a donor and say, here's the tangible result of what you gift. And we know if you can show the efficacy of the programs, then you'll raise more money. Donors want to know their money is being well spent. And so your numbers can tell your story if you do a donor impact statement. A donor impact statement is basically showing the donor what it cost per year and what the impact of that was, or per month or per day, whatever, depending on when they're what you're asking for. So if for $15,000 a year, if you're going to be able to pay for the cost of, you know, six people to be on the bus, or one person to be on the bus, I should say, you know that when you're driving down Kingwood Drive, you're paying for one of the adults with learning disabilities to go to their job. You know, or you know what we're going to talk. My preference is to do everything on a monthly basis. The cash flow problems are some of the biggest issues nonprofits have, and the single best way to solve that is switch your annual donors to a monthly giving program. And we had a lot of success with this at Amnesty. You take your annual gift that somebody gave you, say it's $1,000, and you drop the last zero, and you ask them to give that much, $100, every month. Now what you got is a 20% increase in revenue. And you make it really easy for them. You're going to ACH it. You're going to send them an email showing them pictures of what was being done and reinforce what they get. $50 a day pays for one person to sit on the bus. $1,250 a month, $15,000 a year, whatever their gift level is, show them the impact.
Yep.
So that's that. That's basically the magic sauce. Using that unit economics from 1, 2, and 3 to show how many lives are impacted by somebody's gift on a monthly basis.
Yep. Excellent stuff. And I can't wait to summarize this in my show notes. Any parting words of advice for our nonprofit listeners?
Bill, I think the webinar is really, really helpful because it does take the step-by-step plan. And we're doing a workshop in the new year because so many people have asked for more help. So I'm excited about getting that going. But if anybody's struggling with financial management, just not getting actionable insights for the leadership team or the board, go to growthforce.com/NFP and fill out the form. You can start a conversation with one of our teammates to give some advice. There's a lot of helpful resources, including the webinar, to help you serve more people and raise more money.
Yep. Yep. And again, I can't wait to check out that webinar myself. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you to learn more about Growth Force in general, how do they go about doing that?
Email is the best way. I love answering and helping people. Stephen, Stephen, at growthforce.com. Our website is growthforce.com. LinkedIn, I'm Stephen King, CPA. And I'm also S King GForce on Twitter.
S King GForce on Twitter. Fantastic. Excellent. Stephen, again, this is wonderful stuff. And I hope you'll be my guest at some future point for episode for round 3 of the Nonprofit Snapcast with Stephen King. And as always, thank you for just joining me at the microphone. This has been excellent.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.